Welcome to Jewish History with Rabbi David Katz, connecting the human side to Jewish history. For sponsorship opportunities or to support this podcast, please visit our donate page at www.support.rabbidavidkatz.com.
Hi, it's Motzi Shabbos, and I finished my Shabbos. Actually, I didn't finish the Shabbos because I was rushed. I had too much material, but I'm going to share part of it as something I hope will be thoughtful for Pesach, as sponsored by good friends at Gluck Plumbing, who in Israel, I believe, for Yom Tov. And I don't think this is refried beans, in my opinion. And I'm obviously not going to go through the whole Shabbos of Gold Rush. That's 2.5 hours. But let me just share a point or two that hopefully will be no gave to your Pesach discussions. And here we go. You know, there's a din of Bal Yerah Bal Yamot, says, you know, you can't own Chametz. And Bal Yerah Bal Yamot is very complicated. If you go into different shittas of Rishonim. So ordinarily, you say like this, buy your own matzah, that's what we all follow, that's why you get rid of the chametz, you sell it, you burn it, this, that, and the other. We all know also that when it says, lo yirah lecha chametz, it's shalchoy yatorei abatorei shalchem shalgavah. We've all heard that. So in other words, if there was chametz in my house that belongs to a guy, that's okay. I'm not even going to buy your matzah. That basically is what happens when you sell the chametz. Agree? You sold it, but it is in your house, in your basement, in your pantry, wherever you locked it up. But it is in your property. And yet, in spite of what I just said, you're not over on anything. You're not violating the din of owning chametz because you sold it. So, shalchol yatorei shalchem shalgavah. We all know that. And there are two pesukim. How's it go? Ba'yirah, ba'yimotza really goes backwards. It's ba'yimotza, ba'yirah. In other words, ba'yimotza is in 12:19, and ba'yirah is in 13:7, in terms of the book of Shemos of Exodus, in Parshas Bo. I think first it says something like, Sheba siyam sorli motza botechen. And later on in the Kaddish Kol Bechor part, it says, Le'yirah lecha chametz al yisor b'chol v'chol sheba siyamim. So I'll say that again. In one pasuk it says, chametz should not be found in your houses. And the other pasuk it says, lo yireh lecha chametz, lo yireh chasor b'chol gvulcha, in all your boundaries, not your houses, shivas yamin. So one case says batechen, and one case it says gvulcha, your bias, your gvul. And the other, and again, in one place it says lo yimotzei, the other one says lo yireh. The Gemara talks about it and so forth in first parak. I'm sure many people are familiar with that. But I'm going to get to the funny part, the weird part. Pashtub Shat goes like this. But you and I follow. Somebody else's chametz can be in my house. But chametz that I own should not be in someone else's house. Right? No, let's suppose I didn't sell the chametz. I didn't. And I put all my chametz in my next door neighbor who happens to be a not Jewish and a friend of mine. It could happen. Am I over? You say, well, yeah, you didn't sell the chametz. The Shulchan Aruch talking, Tav Mem, somewhere over there, says those very words. If you're a Jew is mafkid chametz by somebody else, it's the mafkid's problem. Meaning, the Jew, if he didn't sell it, and he owns it, it's in violation of Bayer Bayer Motzed. That is the sheet of Maimonides, Rambam. But Nachmanides, Ramban, there's a difference, very interesting. I don't know how well known is that. It's not. It is well known. It's not well known. It's from Ban and Chumash. When the pasuk of Sor lo yimotzei b'avotechem, it goes to all Arichas from Mechelta. Mechelta is very authoritative. It's a Tanaitic midrash on the book of Shemos, as you know. So we passing from Mechelta. Question is, what does Mechelta mean? And without reading, I'm going to give a whole shiur over here, but without reading the words of the Mechelta, it's in the Ramban. So no, pull out your rusty, trusty Mikras Gedolos and get, you know, the Pasuk of Limotzi Botechem, which is Yud Beis Pasuk Yud Tes in Shmos. And you're going to see the Ramban goes on to say, and again, I'm not going to sit here for many, many minutes and read through the whole business. You do that. But he's going to say, guess what? Just like if a guy puts his chametz by you, it's okay. If you put your chametz by a guy, it's also okay, even though you didn't sell it. I'll read you a summary. Check out the Aruch HaShulchan, who he always liked for his summaries. I mean that. He's very good synthetically. I mean, he's a Dundee Mayas Gama. In Tough Mem, in beginning in Dalet, Tough Mem, Sim and Dalet. And he says, Be'emes HaRamban Kasa B'chomesh She'en Over B'Bal Yirael B'chomesh Shalom B'Shuso. Hevi Amagi Mishnah Shon. It's in Amagi Mishnah also. They quote that Ramban. In other words, that you're not over and buy your own by your mother, unless you have two things at the same time. You're owning it, it's shalom, or b'shusa, and it's in your house or your premises. I will chametz shalom she'en b'shusa, but if you own chametz that's not in your house, which I just told you, I put it by my next door neighbor who's a Gentile, for example, and he agreed to do it. Ain't over by your own. Wait a minute, I thought you got to sell your chametz, or I thought you got to burn your chametz. Or I thought you have to be mavatel your chametz. I mean, that's the basics of Pesach, isn't it? You're supposed to get rid of chametz. Hold on for a second. Let me continue. So I thought you have to get rid of this, and the Ramban is saying that no, that you put the two pesukim together, bal yirah, bal yimasa. And it comes out, according to his reading, from the Michelta, that is, interpretation of that pasuk, that you're not over on Bal Yirah Bal Yimasa unless you have it in your house and you own it, right? If it's neither of the two, if you don't have either of the two, you're not over. Again, B'chein Kasav Aram B'per Kama, Aram 2, Afilo Chimtzel Shal Yisrael, Kol Shul B'shus Einu Yehudi, Einu Overlov, B'achi Yisim Michelta. He's got a mechel to back it up. Now, midrabanan, it's true, you have to fix that. You would have to be mevarida. But that's midrabanan. I'm asking a question like this. Why did God set it up this way? You understand? We're trying to understand Bal Yirah Bal Yimasa in the deraisa aspect. Now, the Rambam doesn't agree with this, and he says, as you and I do, Mr. Shulchan Aruch says, that if you don't get rid of your chametz, that's true, and you put it by your Gentile neighbor, you don't do beer, or you don't do, bittle, or that kind of thing, or sell it, then you are over. I understand that. But there are situations in which can be semach on the Ramban, or at least let's put it this way. I found one big authority that says that, named the Shagas Aryeh, maybe you've heard of him, where in Simpei Gimel, I'm reading a simplified form here, he raises the question, "B'chamish shalo she'ela b'chamish shalo pei gimel shalo bittel konam mizmani sura." What if a guy, for whatever reason, was not b'vatol chametz in time? He screwed up. He didn't b'vatol chametz in time. Im yesh lo takana b'socha pesach milavra bal yirah bal yimotza. Is there any way for him to avoid the problem of bal yirah bal yimotza? Right? And he says, "L'das Ramban b'siyato yesh v'yesh takana kol gazeh." Yes, if you go to Ramban, there certainly is a way out. And that means you get it out of your rishus. Either you put it by somebody you know, or put it in the street, or something like that. To conclude, as he says, that we're skipping all the middle stuff, Hecha, Hilka, Hecha, Delobir Chametz Kodem Pesach, Umatzah B'Sof Pesach, for whatever reason, the guy was not Mevar to Chametz, he wasn't Mevata to Chametz, all the rest, it happened. V'yev Shalavar, and it can be Mevar, right? Of course, if you can burn it, you burn it. But if you're not in a situation to burn it, for example, I just realized I have chametz in my mansion in Florida. So I don't know if I owned one. So I can't burn it. I'm in Baltimore. What do I do? Yotzei ein b'shuso. So be motzi from your shus. You can call somebody up down there and say, take it out of your shus. Put it out, in someone else's property. If the other person will agree. Let's say the person's not Jewish. Or at least be make hefker yerushus. Mafker nechametz, that's the least you can do. But at least, now I get, and that's not for regular day situations, for b'dievet, I get that. That is true. No question about it. But there is such a thing. So why does God, because remember, according to Rabban and Ran and those who hold like that, That's the deraisa. Midrabbanan, they say you got to be revired and so on and so forth. But what do you do in a situation? Like I just said, the Shakisari is talking about. So you go like that. There's a Shitas Gaoni Mever, some people may remember, who says, even if you put it by another Jew, believe that or not, hear that? Put it by another Jew, you're not over it. And if you put it by a Jew who doesn't know that you put it by him, I guess neither of you are over it. Because he can't be held responsible. He didn't know that it was on his property, that you snuck it, put on his property on Pesach. And I'm not responsible because it's not in my rishos. It's in another guy's rishos. There's a whole rush on this and all the rest in the first paragraph. Some adult. Anybody who's learned Pesachim knows what I'm talking about. So, question I'm raising like this. I thought Chametz is such a big deal. Matter of fact, remember the Radvaz I quoted in the past? You can look it in the Chidah HaGad, he brings it in the very beginning, where the Radvaz was asked, how can we freak out over Chametz more than anything else? Is it Dinah Bonushet? Is it Mashahu? I mean, it's crazy, you know? We don't do it by other Chayav courses. We don't do it by other Averis. What's happens with the Chametz? And the Rabbaz, the Shulchan Rabbaz, concludes that the metaphorical interpretation of Chametz is the ikar in the Jewish mind. Metaphorically, we all understand, you're not simply getting rid of Chametz, but the Chametz represents the Yetzer Hara, Averis, you know, bad machshavas, whatever, something negative. And so the Jewish attitude is you have to go and chase after it and destroy it. Bechurin of a Sidkin. You have to look at, you know, imagine what Rishol Solanter would do if he gave a speech. When the Bedikas Chametz L'Or Haner Bechurin of a Sidkin. You're searching your conscience. You have to do Bechurin Haner through honesty and through the Torah. You have to look at the nooks and crannies. You know, your bad meters are hidden in places you don't want to look at. And so on and so forth. So he says, this idea, ideational idea in Jewish thought over many centuries, that the Chametz represents more than just the Chametz. It represents, you know, Ra, and Machshavos Ros, and Deos Ros, and all the rest of that stuff. Maisim Roim. That's the idea that descended into the Jewish consciousness and became the basis of so many Jewish laws and practices. I get that, you know, I hear that. So, if that's the case, then Vos Epis, to have all these coolness and leniencies among important Rishonim, I mean, the Ramban and the Ran is not a little thing. And the Gaonim I just mentioned is even crazier, more liberal. And so what's going on over here, right? This made me think, as I usually do, kind of historically, you understand? Or ideationally. I'm going to link what I'm saying today with what I mentioned last time, the other day. I'm going to read you what I wrote in my talk, even though, believe it or not, I went so long with other stuff, I never got around to this part. So here we go. This is what I wrote. The Chametz, as we all know, is supposed to represent the Yetzer Hara. When I get rid of my Chametz, I'm symbolically getting rid of my evil inclination, my sins, like the Rabbis. This takes us back to the original Pesach in Egypt, where the Jews were told to get rid of their idols, especially their idolatrous state of mind, their belief in the idols. That's kind of like what the whole message of original Pesach is like, correct? Mishkol lechem menetzah, mishkol lechem me'avodah zarah, u'kichu ha'pesach. And the whole Korban Pesach pshat is to get rid of the belief in the Elohim Mitzrayim. You're taking their God, hein nisbach es tov as Mitzrayim be'neim b'lo yiskalunu, you're painting the blood on the doors, and the guns of business back and forth. Now, let us think historically. The Jews were all supposed to dramatically switch from idolatry to Judaism. No, they were in Mitzrayim. They believed in the gods of Egypt. The Memtesh Sharitum couldn't help it. Most of them, anyway. They're into all this Avodah Zarah stuff. And now comes this dude named Moshe, who says, we're getting out of here. And not only am I taking you out, but I'm actually calling you to, you know, flush the toilet. You have to think now in a brand new way. You just have to have a complete, you know, rethinking of Metzius. From idolatry to Judaism. Did they? There's a famous passage in Yecheskel, the book of Yecheskel, Perichov, chapter 20, where it says they didn't. This is what the book says in the book of Yecheskel. Notice this, Hashem talking through the Navi Yecheskel. But Omar Alehen, I, Hashem, said to them, Ish shikutzi ino vashlichu. Every person should get rid of the idols between your eyes. You know, as you worship little idols. Obegilule mitzrayim alti tamo'o. Ani Hashem Elokeichen, Don't be metami with the gilule, with the disgusting idols of Egypt. Vayam rubi, but Klal Yisrael did not listen to me. Velo avushmo lishmo ilai, and they wouldn't listen. Isha shikutsi inim lo ishlichu, nobody got rid of their idols. Ves gilule mitzrayim lo azovu, for omar lishpo chamosi aleichen. And Hashem says, I was so angry that they didn't listen after I went through all this trouble, started taking him out with the 10 plagues, that I made up my mind, but Omer, that I would pour out my wrath on them. See, there was one point where the Baruch Hashem wanted to kill all the Jews, right? But he didn't. And the Pasuk goes on to say that I refrained from doing this. So it shouldn't be a chil Hashem. Literally, a chil Hashem. That is to say, like Moshe Rabbeinu said by the Egel and by the Meraglim, if you do it, Loma Yom Mitzrayim, you know, the Goyim will say, hey, what a stupid situation. He brought all these 10 plagues. The Jews did not respond appropriately by getting rid of their idols. And so he killed them all in Egypt. This God is pretty dumb. So I didn't want to make a Chil Hashem. But Aslaman Shmi Levilti Hechel Leni Agoyim Ashehem Abesochem I had already told him through Moshe Rabbeinu I was going to take him out of Mitzrayim. Remember, Moshe Rabbeinu shows up to Paro and says, Shalachim Iba Abduni, Bnei Bechari Yisrael, all that stuff. And now it turns out that I kill them all. So I didn't want to do that. And you can go look at Perk Tetzayin. Tetzayin also in Cheskel. The Gemara sort of is uncomfortable with that. Hodis Yushalim Stovah. So anyway, and so what was the actual spiritual matzav of Klal Yisrael? Time of the original Pesach, not so great. But on the other hand, what do you expect? I mean, they were, you know, slaves in Egypt. They were Shakua in Mitzrayim, Batim Oleha, Arz Osam. And that's where they were holding. And you're making a big demand on them. Sure, some Jews, I'm sure, became total monotheists. Moshe, Aaron, Miriam, Caleb, you know, I get it. And they disbelieved in the gods of Egypt, but many did not on that original Passover. And understandably so. They've been through the ringer. And as far as they knew, Egypt had all the power, and the Jews were always helpless during the period of slavery. And they suffered and left, and nothing could do about it. That must reflect a divine Messias. I think this is why Hashem says, like I mentioned the other day, it means that God deemed it necessary to do something to the gods of Egypt, to the physical statues, because this one cracked, that one melted, that will persuade the Hebrew slaves that these statues have no power, hopefully purging the slaves from their theological errors. Now, if the Jews were in such a theologically fragile state of mind, then a requirement of cold turkey, meaning a requirement to completely and instantly eradicate any residual beliefs in the Egyptian deities, would have been too much for many Hebrews, even on the night of Pesach. I suspect, this is a pshat in the Mechilta, that says, there's one mandam who says, you have to paint the blood on the outside, and the heck with the Egyptians. I think it's Melissa and Azari, I think, in the Mechilta. There's another day that says like this. No, if you want to, you can paint the blood on the inside. We've talked about it in the past. So when I was painting the inside, it's basically saying like this. You can't tell me to live in an Arab neighborhood and fly Israel flag. Not now. Don't kill me. You should say, well, you should have a moon on. Do it anyway. I get that, and I respect that, but it's too much to ask for a regular guy. You understand? Especially with no experience in fighting and so on and so forth. And so, it would have been too much for many Hebrews, even the night of Pesach. Despite the evidently superior power of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, despite his greater power than the Egyptian gods and Egyptian power structure, because he is going around killing all the firstborn, right? One could think that the Egyptians' God had power, and belief in them in one fashion or another would continue in their minds, even when they left Egypt. They would simply say, Moshe's God, our ancestral God, is stronger than the Egyptian gods, which is also a thrill and a rush. Right? They weren't exactly Maimonidean in their theological notions, like I mentioned the other day, to say, as is Nishto, all the gods of Egypt don't really exist. It's a figment of the imagination. It really is. Like we say today, what is all this Avodah Zarah stuff? It's baloney, you see? Now, consider this well. Was it necessary for the Hebrew to be Maimonideans in order to merit being part of the Yetzias Mitzrayim?
That's a high bar. Or was it enough that they should believe at that time in the supremacy of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and be willing to follow him out of Egypt in defiance of all the Egyptian gods? No, they do believe they're Egyptian gods, but their God is stronger. Was it really necessary for the Hebrew slaves to come to the conclusion that all the gods of Egypt were figments of the imagination with no actual existence? One big mistake of thought. That's a high bar. It seems to me, based on the story of the golden calf that came later, not too much later, that the non-Maimonidean theology was good enough. It was enough to say there are made gods and their forces, if you wish, which have certain powers, but the Jewish God is infinitely stronger. That's what Chazal mean, as far as I can tell, when they say it, they talk about Shidud Hamarochos. The Rebbeinu Shlomo was Meshadeh Hamarochos. He messed up the astrology. You know what I'm saying? Really, it was supposed to be Mazel Tov, as you eat a month of Egypt, and really, I'll be astrological Teva, if I can use that term. The Egyptians should have won all the rest of it, but the Rebbeinu Shlomo was Meshadeh Hamarochos for Klal Yisrael. This, of course, is a reflection of the two schools of thought in Judaism as far as astrology is concerned. I think I talked about it the other day. There's always been one that says there's something to astrology, which therefore means there are all these kochas and things. Yes, Hashem created them, but in other words, they're out there. Versus Eino Milvada, plain and simple. So the question, as I would put it, as you frame it in your Seder discussions, is it avoiding exclusivity or supremacy? The Rambam would say it's exclusivity. Eino Milvada. There are no gods of Egypt. There are no kochas of the astrology. The Rambam, as you know, says astrology is a bunch of baloney. It's a famous letter to Marseille. Astronomy, he says, is a science, but not astrology. And the other line of thought is, as you find many places, I spoke the other day, that no, astrology is a metzias. Hashem is stronger, he made them, but nevertheless, it's a metzias. In my opinion this year, this is reflected in the liberal opinions of the Ramban and the Ran and et al. In the Torah's rules regarding destruction of chametz, and the different ways that they propose of avoiding Bal Yirah Bal Yimasa. In other words, the concept of Tashbisu, think like Beis Shammai. Beis Shammai says, we don't pass this way. Beis Shammai says, I'm sure you know, if you ever learned the beginning of the first parak of Chukim, I'm sure most people listening to this have, that Beis Shammai said, you have to mamash literally destroy all the chametz. You can't even sell it. If me, I'm a Jew, today's 2 days before Pesach, right? Saturday night in Baltimore. So you got Sunday, Monday's already here, Pesach. My job, according to Beis Shammai, my job is to consume or destroy or otherwise make sure that the chametz is passed out of existence. It's not enough to sell it to somebody else. I actually have to make sure that the chametz is not in existence by the time Pesach comes around. Right? Remember that? So, that's pretty severe. So, but in other words, Beis Shammai is not giving just their opinion. They're giving an old tradition within Judaism. That's how we understand it. So, what's the shot over here? Right? So, if you say Tashbisu, especially like the way I just said, you have to destroy chametz, that's like a Maimonidean vort. In other words, if you regard the chametz as representing, for example, he hates a horror or rah or something like that. So what you're demanding is Tashbisu, total destruction of any belief other than Eino Milvado. Total destruction of any belief other than Eino Milvado. Which must have been hard for the original slaves, I'm sure. And that's why, if you think about it, Tashbisu is a mitzvah sase, an active act, not a passive one. The kind of intellectual cognition required to arrive at a Maimonidean understanding, demands active thought. That's why I say many times, go explain to people, literally in Melvado. So don't go for a bracha of a rebbe, don't go to a kever, don't do this, don't wear a red string, all the rest of it. It's Eino Melvado. Talk to Hashem. All right, hold on for a second. Here it is. I'm reminding, I'm looking at the Shevchi of Baal Shem Tov, the official bio of the Baal Shem Tov, who, according to the story, his father died when he was young. The father's going to die. The father in his dying deathbed takes the young Baal Shem Tov, but he says, Hine ani roesh atoter neri v'lo zachis l'galoscho. I see you're going to be my successor. I know I'm passing away. I'm not going to be able to raise you. Remember one thing. Hashem itcha lochein lotir b'shem dover. Right? God's always with you, so you don't have to worry about anything else. If you see an animal, a guy, a wild dog, this and you talk to Hashem. This is kind of a Maimonidean idea. Don't say go talk to the Baba Yaga, you know, don't talk to the Yetzer Hara, don't talk to this, don't talk to the Yetzer Tov, or the Moloch, all the rest of it. Hashem mitcha, that's all. So that's one way of looking at it. And that's what you call Tashbisu. As I see it, that's the Mandamar, who says you have to literally destroy the Chametz. And either the Beishamai, which is really radical, they make sure it doesn't exist by the time Pesach comes around. So in the terms of the Averis, you can't go back to them, right? Or even the Beis Hillel way, but at least you have to destroy or remove from yourself all the Chametz. You can't own it on Pesach. But again, that's a high bar to say it's a mitzvah zaseh tashbisu, mental tashbisu. Not everybody's educated. I'm asking you the following question. The B'nai Yisrael, when they left Mitzrayim, they had a yeshiva education, they had a day school education. What did they know they're Jewish? I'm serious. Right? They didn't have a chinuch or anything like that. So, I mean, maybe Shevet Levi, according to the story, but, you know, what do you want? But again, that's a high bar. How many philosophers were there among the ex-slaves? You couldn't demand that from the masses. And so rather, seems to me, demands from the Hamunam had to be minimalistic. It sufficed for them not to be full-fledged idolaters. It suffices to realize the Ribbono Shel Olam is more powerful than all the Elohim Mitzrayim put together. They could slaughter the God of Egypt and nothing would happen to them. Their own Jewish God was so powerful, he could protect them. So in other words, my God is the biggest boy in the block. That's a different shot than saying, there is no block. That my God is the only thing that exists. Right? And that's the idea of El Chol Elohim Mitzrayim and Seh Shvatim. Meaning, Hashem is like dealing with them by Sher Husham. Those who believe in the Elohim Mitzrayim, yes, Seh Shvatim, I'll punish them. What? Punish them? I don't have to punish the Elohim Mitzrayim. Suppose you tell me you believe in a blue bunny rabbit. That's the God. I don't have to out-argue blue bunny rabbit. It doesn't exist. Just because you say believe it, you have figment of your imagination. It doesn't exist. But that's not what it says. B'chol Elohim Mitzrayim, yes, Seh Shvatim. Meaning, even if you think that the Jewish gods have, the Egyptian gods, I'm sorry, have some realistic existence, either Ribbono Shel Olam would destroy them. No, that's important by Sher Husham. They had to deal with them where they're holding. It also sounds to me as if the slaves believed that their own enslavement had been brought about through the power and direction of the Egyptian gods. How'd they get to where they were? That's how they're brainwashed. Didn't the white people say to the blacks in the South when they were slaves, it's all part of the Bible, Chum and all the rest of it? You use religion to support the power structure. As a matter of fact, if you go to the Meniso, who's quoted in Josephus and a few other places, that's in the Second Temple Old Egyptian History book by an Egyptian priest. He reports that, you know, Pharaoh was told by the gods to mess over the Jews. So it may be that the Jewish slaves attributed their own enslavement to the power of the Egyptian gods. In that case, it was those gods who were responsible for all their suffering. And now, Mitzrayim, Hashem said, oh, I'm going to punish all those guys for bringing all this misery to you. You understand? I'm sure many of the Jews, the original Pesach, felt this way. To explain to them that actually, baby, ain't no gods. There are zero gods in Egypt. The whole thing's a figment of imagination. Would have been too hard for them to grasp. This is what I suspect. Now, let's go over to the original Pesach. Didn't the Jews, many Jews, have idols in their houses? That's what Yechezkel just said. I read you that pasuk. I mean, did they have keshkes in their houses? The answer is yes. What happened to those idols? Yechezkel says, God took them out of Egypt despite the fact that they brought their idols with them, at least some of the Jews. Hashem said, I wanted to avoid Echil Hashem. So what did these Jews do on the night of original Pesach? This is my speculation. I don't know. Did they destroy them? I'm sure some did. Not the ones I'm talking about, right? Not the Jews that Yechezkel is talking about. So what did they do? I can only surmise, based on what we've spoken about today, that the night of Pesach, they removed their idols from their homes. But then maybe they left them outside. Meaning, and they're recoverable. Basically, maybe with their Egyptian friends, when they go to take the gold and silver from the Egyptian friends, they say, hold their idols for us. I don't know. In other words, their idols were either not in their homes or not in their rishus. That's the Ramban. You understand? No, they weren't violating L'Yerol B'Yom Ma'aseh. I don't know about the spirit of the matter, but they certainly weren't violating the letter of the law. And being the Chumash reminds us of those idols, the various shitas bring to mind the various ways Jews made sure there were no idols in their homes on that original Passover night. The frum is the tashbizu. So the ones who are real frum destroyed their idols. But others did like the Ramban. You put the idols away. Yeah. Outside in the street, made a hefker, you can recover it later. By a guy, whatever. And Zichesker reminds us that these idols were recollected before the actual Exodus. Now, thus, the chametz actually represents the idols, which were not so neatly removed from the belief system of many Jews. Now, eventually they were, and eventually they stopped believing gods of Egypt, but I don't know when. As I pointed out in the fat past, not all Jews in the original Pesach were holding the same level. Hence, some painted the blood on the outside, some on the inside. Moshe Rabbeinu addresses the Jews in three phases. Remember the tripartite division of Pesach and Dikon. Three groups in Beis HaMikdash represent the three kolos that Moshe sent out. Rishalmi did it last year. He spoke to three in a very loud voice, the three sets of Jews in Egypt. They all weren't holding on the same level. It's not surprising because we're talking about a large population. Think about this. I would suspect that the more you closer you live, the more you live in Goshen, maybe you were quote-unquote more from, relatively speaking. I could be wrong. But others lived all over the country, about Timbaleers or some. When we say that we're supposed to imagine ourselves long ago as if we were among those leaving Egypt, I think it behooves us to raise the question in our minds, which group will we have belonged to? Will we have been among those who did Tashbisu? As I called the Maimonideans, they said everything we've been taught until now is just total baloney. Or would we have belonged to the group to the Jews? Would we have belonged to the group who found it a challenge even to disassociate themselves, however temporarily? So I say, they never really got rid of their idols. And they reappeared in the Egel Azov, of course. And, I mean, they removed them from their shoes on Pesach night, that's all. I think the different opinions and traditions of how to remove chametz may taka be of great antiquity and may reflect different family traditions regarding how radically was one supposed to detach himself from chametz. It may be the Beis Shammai who says your responsibility is to make sure the chametz is not in existence by the time Pesach comes around. I think Beis Shammai they're bearing their old traditions, may be the descendants of what I would call the Maimonidean elite, those who understood that, you know, it's all lies, it's all this and the other, has to be all destroyed. Such an assertion can actually be defended if you think about the famous elitism of Beis Shammai, because he said you can only teach somebody who's a Ben Tovim, and Ben Yichus, all those things like that. Where's that come from? Maybe it's an ancient thing. It goes back to original Pesach time or whatever, in which the frum sort of segregated themselves from the others. Even they talked to their neighbors. They said, there is no other gods. The other Jews couldn't understand that. But if they say, our God is stronger than the other gods, there are other gods, but ours is stronger, that they can understand. So Pesach, among other things, saw a mass phenomenon, a couple million Jews, 600,000 men, but not every Pesach Seder, if I can use that term, not every Pesach ceremony on the first night of Pesach was understood identically. Some understood it like what I call the Maimonidean elite,
They were actually embracing a new vision of reality. And the others say, no, we're not necessarily embracing a vision of exclusivity, but we're embracing a vision of supremacy. Our God is supreme over the other gods. Anyway, that's at least what I think. I want to thank once again Mishpachas Gluck in Israel, Nezra, for sponsoring this. We'll see if I have time to do one more before Pesach comes around. But as we stand right now, I wish, if I don't, let's wish everybody a Chag Kosher V'Sameach.
For sponsorship opportunities or to support this podcast, please visit our donate page at www.support.rabbidovidkatz.com.